Thanks for joining me today. I'd like to invite you to visit my website, johnburney.org, where you can join my mailing list, access video, audio, and written teachings, and sign up for retreats, as well as find the schedule for my public gatherings. Last night, a light came on in my room that woke me up at 2 in the morning. And then I realized it was my phone. I sleep with earplugs, so I didn't hear anything. And I looked over, and a friend of mine had texted me and said, "I just want you to know I'm not dead." When you check the news, you'll know what I mean. And I thought, uh-oh. So I went on to CNN on my phone and was horrified. He was with another friend of his, and they were eating. He texted me today, and they were eating on the strip last night, and when it all came down, and the restaurant ushered everybody upstairs to some second floor room that was apparently safe, and then decided to kick everybody out on the street and lock their door. And it was mayhem. And they didn't know what was happening. They didn't know what was going on. There were all kinds of rumors. And they hid in some garage. And they couldn't even get back in their hotel. They wouldn't let them in. Can you believe that? They somehow got into some other hotel and managed to get back and get their stuff this morning. But you know, people are going to talk about this, obviously, for all the reasons that we will and do. But at some level, it has no explanation. It's unimaginable, is what it is, and horrible. And how do we heal? How do we integrate? How do we live each moment knowing that this sort of thing happens and can happen? There's no guarantees, obviously. And yet, we don't want to be living a life that's, what can I say? Living in paranoid suffering or in sort of delusional airheadedness, but rather how can we be fully real and able to respond appropriately whatever is going on. And what we really are cultivating here is awakened awareness, where we take care of whatever's in front of us, no matter what it is, no matter how awful or how wonderful. It's interesting, I don't know if you ever heard this story. I don't know if it's published, but Suzuki Roshi, when he was looking for a permanent Zen Center residence here in San Francisco, had been practicing in Japan, the Japan Center area, and I think the temple was called Sokoji if I remember correctly, back in the 60s. And they were looking for a permanent resident building in the city, and they were looking at different buildings that were for sale, and there was one really nice building in Pacific Heights. And if you know the city, Pacific Heights is very, you know, well-to-do, wealthy, very nice neighborhood. And there was another building for sale in a very, not very nice neighborhood in Hayes Valley. Back then, it was not a nice neighborhood. It was a very dangerous neighborhood, actually. And it was a great building. It was built by, it was designed by Julia Morgan, who was the architect who designed Hearst Castle and other amazing places. And it was built as a residence home for single Jewish girls. And so if you see the Zen Center building on Page and Laguna, it's got the Stars of David in the grill work around the building. And where the Zendo is now, the meditation hall, it used to be the theater. So people who come to Zazen from the neighborhood come through the entrance that people used to go to see the theater or go dancing and stuff. And I don't know if they've changed it since I lived there, but when I first came, it was Elias Stitchery, which was basically a sewing business that made zafus and zabatons and futons and meditation clothing. It became the library, but that used to be the stage, actually, for the theater, which was the Zendo now. Anyway, Suzuki Roshi, that was a long digression, I'm sorry. I can't help it, it just runs along, you know, somewhere. I try to catch it occasionally, pull it back, get it, you know, put a leash on it. The reason he wanted that building was he wanted people to be alert. He wanted people to be in a neighborhood where they couldn't just be spaced out and not present. And I thought, that's interesting. And it was very, when I first came there, it was pretty dangerous. It was a dangerous neighborhood for a long time that I was there. And there were some people got mugged and murdered. Robert Persig, who wrote Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance, his son was murdered. He was a Zen student, and he got murdered in the neighborhood. It was horrible. You know, so it was a dangerous place. And yet, when you can find your true stillness, which sitting helps, the practice of sitting and meditating is a great training for finding your true grounded stillness in the midst of movement, whether that movement is around you and outside of you, so to speak, or it's your mind or your sensations or your feelings. The core is this presence, which is unflappable and free of self. So we live in a world, the spiritual journey brings you to the place where you realize that it's just not material. It's not just not a material relative life, but it's also an energetic, spiritual, absolute life. And we find in this journey how they dance together, how they're inseparable, really. Form and emptiness, energy and matter is what we are. So as we become more open, more radiant, more awake, if we're really balanced in the process, we become more grounded, more real, more available, more human, more humane, and able to release our pain and hold the hands of others in pain. My niece sent me a little note the other day thanking me for the podcast. I didn't know she was into them, but a friend of hers just found out he had a brain tumor, and he's officiating at her wedding, and she was coordinating all of the care and family and friends and everything. She said, you know, I can't remember how she said it. I almost want to look for her text. Hang on, I don't want to mess it up. Let me find it. It's why I picked that photo today for Facebook when I wrote about this tragedy. It was what she had said. Oh, here we go. He had a successful surgery, by the way. She said, I'm coordinating all the care and his friends and family, so much ache. But I know that the great secret of this jungle is to hold hands and share bananas. Thanks, Tasia. So, here we are, holding hands and sharing bananas. On the deepest level, we are. And that's what the transmission of the Dharma really is. It's not just, you know, cool ideas, you know, or instructions for life and practice, which, of course, we do need at times, usually, help. Guidance, instruction. I've needed tons, as you probably know. Most of us do. That's okay. And when you open here into this clear-mindedness that is free of the burden of the past, free of the burden of the present, and free of the burden of the future, then you're fully alive. And you're available for whatever is given right now. So much of teaching is really instructing us to let go, right? Like even in mindfulness practice training, which I did many years of, you bring your attention back, and Zen too, really, Zazen training is pretty much the same. You bring your attention back from its wandering to the breath, to sensation, and ultimately to suchness or presence. And as you give yourself, as you surrender to that, as you let go into that more and more and more, eventually you realize that you are that. It's not a belief, and it's not a ego trip, not an accomplishment. It's just reality. Actually, it's no big deal. I love when Suzuki Roshi said, nothing special. Nothing like telling the truth and not turning it into something unattainable. Right? But that it's ordinary, that it's what you are. Always, even if you're caught in the pain, in the reaction, in the resistance, in the avoidance. Even if you are, that's okay. Once you notice it, awareness is already sprouting. So be really careful to acknowledge that moment when awareness is sparked. The awareness of even suffering. That all of a sudden there's space that you didn't have before. There's a perspective that you didn't have before. You might miss it easily if you get caught back in the, you know, treadmill of the drama. That's the point you can jump off and be here. And of course, awareness of breath is a great, phenomenal support for dropping out of the habitual mind states and allowing the heart to release its grief, its rage, its frustration, its confusion, its despair. And when you have the glimpse of the truth, which you've all had without a doubt, whether you know it or not, you did. Then even when the tunnel is dark and there's no light, something in you deeply knows to hang in there and to trust what is beyond our comprehension, what's beyond our ability to control and manipulate and comprehend. And actually, that's often a vulnerable place because the heart is more alive there. You're not just muscling through with your will. It's so funny. I remember when I was first a Zen student and I was a guest student, and I think I was, how old was I? 20. And I learned how to practice Zazen, sitting on the Zafu and sitting in, you know, some version of lotus position with a cosmic mudra and all that. And you counted your breath, the in-breath, out-breath, count one. In, out, count two. And you go to 10. And then you go back to one. That was it. And I was really good at it. Just like I was at school. I got A's and I played the violin and performed and I could count my breath to 10 and back. But after a while, I couldn't anymore. In fact, in the beginning, when you're in control, you can do it. But eventually, when you start loosening up and letting go of control, a lot harder. And when I was a monk at Tassajara, which is a monastery where you meditate a ridiculous amount all the time, And that's just normal. And then there's the retreats. Sesshin. And, you know, I would, the thing was, I forgot to tell you that the rules were that if you got spaced out before you got to 10, you had to go back to 1. You couldn't continue to 4 or whatever, right? So you'd go inhale, exhale, 1, inhale, exhale, 2, and then you'd be off daydreaming or spaced out or whatever and have to come back to 1. I couldn't get past 2 for 2 years. That was progress. Eventually, I didn't care. That was real progress. We're very hard on ourselves. We live in a culture that demands it, demands perfection and accomplishment and performance and, right? It's hard to survive if you don't have that these days. Tough environment to be conscious. But here we are. It's our job. And you get to choose to be conscious, really, because it's so easy to be unconscious. There's endless opportunities to check out. Endless opportunities to not be here. I mean, just the internet, come on. I remember when computers were first on the market, you know, for the ordinary folks, not these giant IBM things that were the size of this room, you know, with that probably had less power than my watch now. But then I remember I thought, ooh, those sound really cool. And I didn't want to get one when the first Apple came out, whatever it was called, Macintosh or whatever. Because I was afraid that I would disappear into it. Eventually I got one, 1990, and I disappeared into it. I loved it. Oh, it was so cool. I learned everything about it and all the, it was so neat. I thought, wow, this is how the mind works. This is kind of like the mind. So the mind is endlessly interesting, endlessly seductive. And there's no problem as long as you know how to turn it off and can choose to disengage, in a sense, to get off the treadmill. Right now, you can choose to be here. See? Notice how that worked? All of a sudden, whew, right? So have your inner little Zen teacher bring you back gently, gently. It doesn't have to be hardcore or judgmental or just, hey. I often have a little voice in there. I ask, so what am I doing now? Because I don't even know what I'm doing. Where am I going? I'm in the car. Where am I going? Oh, yeah. I had that all the time when I was practicing and on retreats for decades. So make sure you have a very friendly, loving companion with you all times to help you, come back and to love you and to nurture you when you're hurting. And to forgive you and have total 100% patience. And also to have gratitude for the little things, for the things that you don't necessarily notice that you really do appreciate. You know, like my friend, I can't wait to talk to him. when he's back in town, because I really want to hear what they went through. I really want to hear how profound that experience was, how traumatic and intense, and what they discovered. You know, we got to learn from each other, don't we? I don't teach anything. I just share what I've learned and what I'm learning. And you're learning all the time. That's the beauty of life, is when you realize that you are. And suffering is when you're not. So, you know, most people today, they want to awaken, who are on this journey that you're on and are in some stage of that, you might say. And what I hear a lot is, you know, I've really been at this for a long time and I can really access presence more and more and more. And then, but I always say, oh yeah, that's good, good. But what about when you're not? That's what I'm more interested in hearing about. And I mentioned it recently. You might have been here for that talk when I heard a story about Ramana Maharshi, who one of my close teachers that I was with, Robert Adams, lived with him for the last 3 years of his life and at his ashram in Arunachala. And I love the story that one of Ramana's disciples came up to him and said, you know, Ramana, I have been with you for 25 years, and I have been practicing inquiry, for 25 years, and it's done nothing for me. And he said, try another 25 years. Some people get really angry when they hear that, you know, they get really pissed off. Like, what? Oh, I don't know. I think what's more important is that you discover how to accept yourself, even if you're not enlightened. Even if you're afraid you're never going to get enlightened. Because being human is more important. And I guarantee you that if you learn how to be human fully, awakening of the heart and the spirit will happen completely naturally. Because it's our nature to be awake. So honor your humanity and learn to take care of yourself and others. And you will absolutely find your way to freedom. So. I've often shared that the hardest thing for me, because I was so hardcore when I started out on my Zafu, so hardcore. Ironically, the hardest thing for me to learn on the path was to be gentle with myself. It took me so long. So be kind to yourself. Be gentle to yourself. That's what we need in this world. The spirit will be there. Your light will be there. Your radiance will naturally come forward all by itself. And when it shows itself to you, love it like a beautiful sunset or like a beautiful piece of music. Listen and be fulfilled by that. And when it's not present, just do whatever you're doing. And relax. It's okay. You didn't lose it. Not your fault. I'd also like to ask into the big space of awareness, healing for everyone who has been profoundly injured and just, I don't even know the word, stricken by what just happened. May we all be healed. May we all be free of suffering. May we all find out how to live together in peace and harmony. So if you'd like to come up and have a question or like to talk with me or work on something or just sit together, please raise your hand. I'll call on you. And keep in mind that we eventually podcast these talks. So if you prefer your interaction not be on the recording, let us know and we will edit it. The reason I have to wear these is because I spent my early youth a few blocks from here getting my hearing destroyed at the Fillmore. You'd walk out on a market, you too? Yeah, no. I walk out on Market Street and it was just like this muffled, like your head was filled with cotton. Remember that? You'd hear the Muni and it would go something, these strange sounds. It was really a trip. Harry can't hear me. Yeah, yeah, that's me too. Bill Graham would come up with his, we'd all be waiting in line, and he would be coming up with his big ring of keys and be swinging them. Remember that, David? And yeah, 350. You go and sit down and on the floor and get stoned and hear, the, you know, Country Joe and the, no, not, who was it? Yeah, Country Joe and the Fish for sure, but... Joe Cocker was amazing. Anyway, okay, back. So, anybody like to come up? Who had their, somebody had their hand up? Yeah, come on up.
So I was a teacher for many years, speech therapist, and lived by the clock, half hour. Blocks, you know, because in meetings, very time oriented. And then I had to quit kind of early to take care of both my parents that had Alzheimer's. They died not too long ago. In the process of that, I gave up all my clocks. It was so awesome. Don't have a clock, don't have a watch. Don't have a television. more and more.
You must be suffering.
No, no. Actually, the opposite.
I'm kidding.
I really feel that the more I don't know what's happening, the happier I am. It's like I'm getting, you know, when I don't know what's going on, it feels great.
Ignorance is bliss.
It really is. I recommend it highly.
Yeah, I do too.
But, you know, so like you were talking about, okay, so I got a call from my sister tonight. She said, something bad has happened, but it's nothing in the family. And when you were talking, it occurred to me, bingo, that if maybe some friends might have died in that.
I'm so sorry.
But I'm not sure, you know, and it's odd because I'm talking about this not knowing. Mm-hmm. And my first impulse was to go, wow, I should jump out of here and go find out what's going on, because it might be something completely different. Mm-hmm. But I had this intuition while you were talking that something like that is probably happened to some friends of ours or something. So, it's strange because I feel like, yeah, they could be friends, but it could be anybody. And I would still feel kind of the same way, you know, about it to some degree. But I'm wondering about this, like, not knowing, you know, like having to know. Like, I just caught myself. I don't need to know. I have plenty of time to know when I get back. Don't have to jump up and find out exactly what's going on, right? So I'm wondering if anybody else or you feel, I mean, I just feel really, really beautiful when I don't know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a certain kind of relationship to, let's call it knowledge or information maybe.
Yeah.
That can be a profound burden.
Yeah.
Can exacerbate suffering. And there's another level in which it's absolutely life-saving and essential. So I certainly would not make some rule about it. But when we talk, at least on a deeper level, what's referred to as not knowing has nothing to do with ignorance at all. It has to do with living in the realm of awareness that is free of the mental world. That's very different than not being informed.
Yes.
It's not the same thing.
No.
Okay?
No.
So I wouldn't compare them.
Yes.
They're very different.
Yes, because when your mind is not thinking about yourself, then it's more aware. It seems like for me it's more aware.
I mean, we can be obsessed with thoughts in a way that they actually cause us to be ill, actually.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, thought is like anything else. It can be devastating. It can also be healing. So it isn't thought per se or information per se.
No.
It's really what your relationship to it is and how, if you get attached to it, that's the difference. That's whether you're identified or not. When I say identified, I don't mean... or unidentified, I don't mean callous, like you don't care or you don't have empathy or compassion for sufferings of others. Mm-hmm. If anything, you're much more available to feel what others are going through, not cut off. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people need to get cut off in order to heal, in order to take care of themselves. So it really depends on the individual and where they're at. It's very specific, really.
Yes. Well, I also think that one of the things that I got through taking care of my parents that had Alzheimer's, it was a long process, was not seeing my parents as somehow different just because they had brain disease. Mm-hmm. They manifest differently, but I had this, before I had already had this awakening to the fact that I was not my body, that I was not my mind. And so it was much easier for me to take care of my parents and my sisters, who saw my parents as deteriorating. And somehow I was able to, like, say, no, they're not deteriorating.
It's nice when you can have that perspective.
Yeah, but it was much easier to go visit them
Sure.
Than it was for my sisters.
Mm-hmm.
But even now, as I sit here, like, okay, did some friend, you know, like, did the question mark, did somebody I know die in that, you know? It's like the tendency would be to, like...
Well, when you ask yourself that question right now.
Yeah.
When you tune in to yourself and your body and your being, what is here?
Well, I'm not really... It's strange. I'm not anxious about it. There's a little bit of wanting to... I didn't even bring my phone. Great, give me your phone. No, I want to call right now in the middle, but somehow I know that if I
won't did be that, that long before you leave.
My whole, like, kind of meditative, there's no reason to interrupt that in a way, because right. Whatever's happened has already happened.
Yeah, right. It's not like it's going to make any difference. Not now. No, but I still think it's what's really important, or what I would recommend anyway here, is just to be here.
Yeah.
Even if it includes whatever you're thinking or feeling about your friends.
Yeah, whoever they are.
Whatever. So it's not just thought, but it's actually a connectedness. And as I'm saying, I feel like you're connecting to them, whether they're still embodied or not, or connected. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Okay.
I know that, like, when I was at this hot springs recently, and I thought somebody had taken my bag with my wallet and my phone and everything in it, you know? And you can't help but be anxious when you're...
That's not exactly a pleasant experience.
No, I didn't know, you know. And eventually, and then there's this feeling like somebody had picked it up by mistake and stuck it on top of my car. And it's like you just win the lottery or something, like, you know. It's like, wow, yeah! And all you're doing is getting something that you thought you lost. It's not like anything, you're gaining anything, but yet you feel fantastic because you had this little bit of anxiety that, you know, come back and then... And, you know, so like we get the phone call, oh, it's nobody we know. Oh, okay. But, you know, of course, that's a different kind of... perspective, but your body, you kind of go out of the, because usually I'm in the kind of parasympathetic mode most of the time now, but sometimes some little thing will come like that, you know, pop you right back into a little bit, you know, some anxiety. I think it's normal.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you came up, and I hope your friends are okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Okay. Take care.
All right.
Yeah. Take your time.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, no rush.
Thank you.
Sure.
I was wondering if we could talk about what you ended the talk about, kind of self-acceptance.
Sure.
It's a really kind of, I've been getting really in touch with for the last couple of months, and it's been coming more up, this kind of, just connecting with the self-hatred that I have related to the aspects of myself that have been socially rejected before.
Mm-hmm.
And that trauma of the child, and you know, I can really trace it back, and I can really feel kind of how it happened, and I can it's, you know, I studied a bit of psychology, and so I can understand like evolutionary psychology, the deep effect of social, you know, that they were in a lot of sense kind of survival. And so it triggers this really kind of existential fear in me, and then anything that's, it's like suppressed at all costs, this kind of any authentic expression that had experienced rejection at that earlier age, and then throughout my adolescence as well. And it feels like just the worst feeling ever. Like mm-hmm. it's just like devastating
mm-hmm.
When I really connect with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also, I think, it's also really been the driving force of my spiritual, you know, to
mm-hmm.
the feeling of being estranged from yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's certain, it's this kind of dance, you know, this deep kind of self-hatred as well as this deep yearning to kind of resurrect that authenticity.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Well. Well. It takes courage to be honest. And I really appreciate your sharing that. Because what we can put forward and put into the space, particularly this kind of space of awareness, really begins to become released. We don't know how that happens, but it does. So even as you're sitting here, you're starting to open a little bit. I don't know if you can feel that.
Yeah.
So you already, I call it offering into the space of awareness, the condition. See, these identities that we had, these conditionings that we have, they're literally like identities. They're like, they're constructs. Self-hatred, whatever the qualities they have, we often try to understand them, fix them, get rid of them, change them, whatever. But actually, the only thing they need is acceptance. And when that happens, we become acceptance, we become the awareness rather than the condition, see? And that's where then the conditions begin to lose their grip and their energetic power. Even if they arise, they become less and less of a problem. So it's a natural, what I call, transmutation that happens, that leads to sort of the transcendent, and as you're noticing now, that as you kind of become aware of it, it moves more into awareness. It begins to dissolve. We don't do that. That happens mysteriously. Do you see that?
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. Because it's on some level I can just feel, because this has been such a kind of a fundamental part of how so much of my self-construct got developed, and I can mm-hmm. see that there's going to be a kind of a process. It's not going to, there's not a simple fix to this. It's kind of going to have to be revisited for a while. And
right.
But there are times, like you say, where I can really be with there in a way that it's not, doesn't have the quality of like a life or death experience. It's kind of just, there, and it really got triggered in the meditation. There was a point where there's tears started coming out of my eyes because good.
That's a good sign.
Yeah, and I could feel underneath it, and there was really, it was underneath that kind of self-hatred and this fear was this. Deep kind of sadness of, or, you know, this heartbreak of almost like a feeling like that there's like nothing there, like in this, without that, I have nothing, you know, without that kind of construct that's holding me into this kind of experience of a bind in my body. It's like, I don't know, it's weird. Like, it's just mm-hmm. really, really weird.
Well, no, of course, because it's like, you know, and identities are like, you know, shoes. You know, you wear them and they're, you know, they're familiar. You put on a new shoe, it's like weird. You know, you don't recognize it in a way. And yet, what we're doing here is like taking off a shoe that's too tight. You know, to feel so good to not have that constriction. And there can be a sort of a transition period that's almost like a, you're in limbo.
Yeah, yeah.
Like psychic limbo, and it can be very disorienting for a while. So you're neither there nor here, you know what I mean? You're not quite, you're in between or something.
Yeah.
And that's where your sitting practice will be absolutely necessary.
Okay.
Yeah, that's where you can rely on your body, your breath, not your head or your motion. That's all kind of reworking itself. And if and how you pay attention as you are, and you clearly are, how you pay attention to that process will really determine how it unfolds. And when we'll talk more about that when we talk again. But this is really, thank you so much for sharing so profoundly and deeply your process.
Thank you so much.
Oh yeah, and you're tuning in also. You can feel that, right?
Yeah.
Well, then you're very fortunate, because then you that's what, you know, Suzuki Roshi said that practice begins with enlightenment. What he meant was that you could tune in. That once you can, that's how you know how to follow the way. A lot of people today think that practice ends with awakening, but actually it begins. That's why he called his book Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. Right?
Yeah.
So you've got that, and you're doing really well. So glad to meet you, and I'm glad you got here. And yeah.
Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Yeah. Okay, I must have rambled on today because we don't have any more time for questions. I'm so sorry. But we have lots of time for questions on Saturday. Do we have any more space still? Maybe? Yeah. We have a day-long intensive. I'm doing a day-long intensive in Sebastopol. It's limited because it's a private home. A beautiful place, a beautiful property, and really great place to hang out, 11 to 5. So if you're interested, you can sign up here or on the website. But it's this Saturday. And you know, let's just sit for a little in silence, and then I'll have a few more things to share, okay? So I have a few announcements and then just some last things to say. So hang on. You know, I often say, and it sounds so prosaic, really, take care of yourself. And that could easily be a throwaway line that you sort of goes in one ear and out the other and you don't really hear it. But actually, I mean it so profoundly. In some ways, my whole talk was that distilled down. And that when you really learn to listen to yourself and really learn to take care of yourself, you will heal and you will transform. And you'll be a lot happier and fulfilled, even with challenging, limited circumstances. So I just want to thank you so much for being here and creating this sacred environment that heals all of us and nourishes all of us. And we all contribute that by our attention and our presence on a deep level, really. And thank you for coming up if you did. And, you know, the interaction really can be a powerful healing and teaching dynamic here at Satsang. So I really hope to see you soon. And as I said, it doesn't hurt to repeat. In the meantime, take really good care of yourself. And lots of love and happy trails. Thank you.